Oh, the horns, go.
In everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you win.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing we ever played against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. Zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, it's been a while, but we're back. Are you ready to dazzle the listeners with your football talk?
Man, I am way ready, man. It has been a long 4 months of watching golf and bowling and stuff I don't care about, and I am ready to talk some football.
Fantastic. Why don't we start this first show off as we work ourselves through preseason camp to get into midseason form. Let's start with the offense, and why don't we start it off with the quarterback position?
Sounds good.
Fantastic. So, I don't think there's any debate. AJ's the starter, right?
Man, AJ is definitely the starter. You know, we have seen two leaders under Nick Saban at Alabama. We have been very fortunate with a quarterback that has been able to be there two or three seasons each time. But AJ, man, this is the best situation we have had as a Tide fan under Coach Saban. For this guy to come in with the weapons that he has as a fifth-year senior, man, fans have got to be giddy about this one.
No, absolutely. This is a guy that could have gone pro last year. We saw in the NFL drafts that quarterbacks sort of, you know, really didn't perform well in the draft. He would have at that time been a two-time, three-time national champion winner, two-time starting quarterback. Could have, you know, potentially been drafted really well, really high, but he came back as a fifth-year senior to lead this team, and, you know, we should just be ecstatic as fans that we have AJ back. Let me ask you the hardest, easy question of the whole season, of the whole roster. Who's number two?
Man, number two is Alec Morris. Number two from the fans is going to be Blake Sims. But it's Alec Morris. You and I both know. Alec Morris runs the pro style. He was brought in to be the drop back passer. He is the heir apparent after AJ leaves. And hopefully we will see him get some work this year in mop up duty.
Yeah, I think this is a topic that we're going to spend a lot of time on this season. I think this is a topic that there's going to be a lot of words written about. Across the media, everyone's going to be all hot and bothered about trying to figure out the rotation. And I've kind of reached a point where I think sit back and relax, because here's how I think it's going to play out. We're going to play both of them. We're going to platoon the number two quarterback. And I know that sounds silly, but that's what we're going to do. Saban likes to reward the upperclassmen. I think he has a thing for Blake Sims, and he's certainly a talented player. So he's going to get some run. But Alec, I think, really is the guy he's our best pro style quarterback. And so if you look at all of those trappings, he's the clear number two. But we know that Saban loves to foster competition across the team. And there's no way that the biggest roster battle of all of next year, we're talking the biggest roster battle of all of 2014, he's not going to give it away in week one or week two of this season.
No, he's not. And, you know, Nick Saban cares about protecting the football. Nick Saban cares about being a game manager and not making mistakes. And I will never forget 2 years ago with A.J. McCarron in his first game when he threw those two interceptions. And I was thinking, oh, my gosh, as a brand new starter, he's gone out now and turned the ball over twice. Well, he proceeded to learn from those lessons and only throw five interceptions in all of 2011. So he only threw three more picks the whole season after that first game. Well, last year, the kid threw 30 touchdowns and three interceptions. I mean, how phenomenal is that? And so the reason I bring that up real quick is in the second scrimmage today, as all the fans know, Blake Sims threw three interceptions today. Guys, whoever thinks he has any chance in hell of being the backup quarterback, he threw three interceptions in the second scrimmage game. That's all you need to know.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with you. And he looked horrid in A-Day. Some of the things that he was doing was just wretched. And so it sounds like, and I haven't looked at all the stats, you know, today's scrimmage, but it sounds like it was an extension of that. Do I think that all things being equal, that means he's not the number two? Yes. Do I think in the Sabanomics of the number two quarterback, he's still the number two? He's still one of the number twos, which is the unique thing. We're not saying who's number two and who's number three. There's going to be two number twos, and they're both going to come in as the second quarterback, and they're both situationally going to do what they do. Blake Sims is going to run that run option to burn the clock, and if we are in a situation where maybe we're bringing in a number two earlier in the game and we still want to throw around a little bit, then it'll be Alec. But they're both going to come in, and they're both going to play.
Well, you know, you just talked about fostering competition. Also, in today's scrimmage, apparently, you know, because obviously it was a closed scrimmage except to the media for certain parts of it, but Luke Del Rio was the third string quarterback today in the scrimmage, not Alex Morris. And I'm only bringing that up real quick because maybe Coach Saban is trying to send a message to Alec Morris and trying to put a spark under him because he knows what potential he does have.
See, this is where Saban is, you know, is smart. Genius. There's a roster management component here that sort of your average fan or your average media person doesn't understand. There's a roster component. Alec Morris is a redshirt freshman, so he has, you know, 4 years left counting this upcoming season. Cooper, right. Cooper, Parker, and Luke are all true freshmen, so they have Correct. 4 or 5 years in the program. We just got David Cornwall, one of the best quarterbacks in the country, to commit for the 2014 class. And we just got Ricky Town, one of the best quarterbacks in the 2015 class, to commit, right?
Yes.
So these are guys that are is a junior in high school that is already committed. There is zero chance that Saban is going to send the message that, hey, guys, glad that you've committed, but our quarterback position is signed, sealed, delivered through 2016. That is not a message coming from our coaching staff.
No, it's not.
It is wide open competition. And let me show you how wide open it is. The guy that everyone thinks has it sealed up won't even be the first quarterback off the bench. That's how wide open it'll be. Right. Now, is it really that wide open, or is that messaging? Well, that's a million-dollar question. But I guarantee you both of them will play, if only for that reason.
Oh, yeah, I definitely think it's messaging. And Blake Sims, you know, you recall games last year when he was just running the spread, and we know why they were doing it, because of their depth at running back, and he would have a mishandle the snap and fumble the ball, et cetera. And I think he had one or two turnovers in the season last year because of that. And so he just makes me very nervous. And when he threw off his back foot in the A-Day game and threw it out in the flats, which you never do, and it was picked off and returned for a touchdown, I mean, it's like those are the little things. And so I appreciate everything Blake Sims has done at Alabama.
Sure.
He made it in college. I did not. He's made it on the team for 4 years. I appreciate everything he's done. But Alec Morris, for what you just mentioned with the two signings of the people coming behind you on the assembly line, you better get a fire under your butt, because now's your time to shine.
Oh, absolutely. This is his chance. And I'll say this about Blake Sims. One of the things that's sort of underrated that we should appreciate him for, not only was our, you know, burn the clock offense last year when Jouston went down and we had so many injuries at the running back position, but the look that he gives the scout team, and this is just my wonky opinion, but the look that he gives the scout team, because he can play that no huddle fast paced offense, and we play so many of those styles of opponents, and even more this year, he helps our defense more than he helps our offense. And for that reason alone, I think he gets a little tip of the cap. I think he gets a little, why don't you step here at the front of the line and run that little gadget thing that you do as a appreciation for what you do during practice.
I think that cannot be underestimated. And when you first mentioned that before, I thought that was a bunch of crap, but I think you're correct. Because as more and more teams are bringing that kind of talent at the quarterback position, he brings an element to that scout team that we probably have not had since Saban has been there.
I think what we need to do, and for our listeners, we just need to all agree that when everyone goes, frantic and is breathless over trying to decipher the backup quarterback position, that we just kind of nod. We know what's going on. This is Saban punking everyone, because the rotation and the order in which they come off the bench really is not reflective of what's going to happen next season. What's going to happen next season is going to happen next season. And he's not giving an ounce of that away.
No,
and so
he's
just
not.
Look at it and say, look, as long as AJ doesn't get hurt, I don't give a rat's what happens with the number two guy.
Well, it's just like we saw before when Sims was there, right? And they had the A-Day game, and what happened? They massaged the data such that they both had very similar stats. And at the time, why did you and I say Phillip Sims had similar attempts and completions to AJ, who was going to be the starter, that was going to take
the
job?
To keep him around.
Exactly. Why? Because he was managing the roster right that minute. So now, with Phillip Sims and what has progressed with Phillip Sims, were we right then? Yes, we were. Why was he doing it? He was doing it for right then and now what he thought was best for the team. And so right now, I think today, when he put Luke Del Rio out there and Alex Morris sat his butt on the bench and didn't get to have reps in the second scrimmage, he is sending him a message that he must not be doing something in the 19 practices of August that he needs to see from his quarterback, who he thinks is going to be the next guy next year. You and I saw last year in that Missouri game that A.J. McCarron, things can happen on a dime.
Oh, sure.
And when he took that roll up in the backfield and he came out of that game, toughness and grit got him back out there. But we're just one play away from this being a problem. We lucked up for the past 2 years.
Yeah, I want to whistle past that graveyard, because I know you're right. But when you put Luke Del Rio in there, man, you're sending multiple messages. And this is sort of the puppet master that Nick Saban is. Because Luke Del Rio is one of three freshmen, but he's a walk-on. So you're saying something to highly touted Cooper Bateman, highly touted Parker McLeod, as well as you're saying something to Alec Morris, as well as you're saying something to David Cornwall, who's coming in next year. Look, they've got a walk-on as the number two guy who could potentially be the number three guy who could potentially be the number two guy, and maybe he's the one I need to compete against. And hell, he's a walk-on. So you have a layered messaging system there. He didn't just pick one of the freshmen. I think he intentionally, because guess what? While Saban has been at Alabama, we have never played one snap for a true freshman quarterback. So do you think it matters who comes in and takes snaps in the second scrimmage of fall practice? Not a lick, because they're not going to play. And so he picked the one that would send the largest message, the most focused message to those people tuned in and listening.
Well, and this is probably more detail than maybe someone to hear, but not only did he do that maybe for the reason you just suggested, but Luke Del Rio, who obviously has, family ties to playing at a higher level. Luke Del Rio had scholarships to several different places. Luke Del Rio wanted to come to Alabama because the system that was in place at Alabama. And so, not only did he play him possibly because he was a walk-on, but maybe it was a nod because you didn't have to come here. I know sure. Who you are. You're Del Rio. You could have gone anywhere, or no, you could have gone several places.
He had scholarship offers at D1 programs. Oklahoma
right.
State, who's known for prolific passing,
right.
Offered him a scholarship. He had a scholarship at UCLA. I'm sorry. That's pretty impressive.
It is.
So those are impressive programs that he had scholarships to. And so you make another point kind of around the recruiting arm, as well as just a motivator to the walk-ons. Hey, that's sure. One of us out there.
Right.
That's one
Absolutely.
Of us out there.
Absolutely.
So again, we're getting into nuanced kind of layered message, but that's kind of the genius of what Saban does, is that you can dissect some of it and you can over dissect some of it. I I've probably been guilty of that at times, but I think there's just so much there. There's so much meat there off of just something that would otherwise just be throwaway. And you probably won't see any articles written about that context. Pat ourselves on the back.
No. Right.
This is a place where you get some of that.
This is why we do what we do. Well, hey, let's jump to TJ Yeldon, because we were very lucky and fortunate to have this kid step in as a true freshman at a Daphne High School and do what he did, especially when Jostin Fowler went down with the injury that he had. You know, talk a little bit about your take on Mr. T.J. Yeldon.
Well, just what a phenomenal, you know, dynamic guy. The freshman that we had come in last year, you know, T.J. Yeldon, you know, kind of the top of the list. Amari Cooper's on the list, and I put Geno Smith on the list. Those are three high-impact freshmen that came in last year. We don't win the title without them.
We definitely don't win the title without Yeldon and Cooper. There's no doubt.
I just don't think we do. And I put Geno up there. You don't have to. That's fine. You know, different opinions. But what's impressive to me is everyone said, God, this Alabama team is loaded last year. And that was before those three guys stepped in and had roles that were just phenomenal. And so you think, man, who's going to come in and have that type of impact? And we're talking about running back, and this is certainly a sweet spot for it. But where do we have those kind of guys come in and have that kind of impact? But, you know, kind of where you're going, you know, T.J. Yeldon looked really good in spring last year. And his first touches against Michigan last year was just, you know, and we had a, you know, sort of a back and forth with a buddy of ours. Didn't think, you know, T.J. looked that good, but, you know, first possession in which, you know, first play that T.J. touched the ball, we were both getting texts like, yeah, he's the real deal. You know, he flashed just instantly. And, of course, throughout the season, looked really, really good. He's considered one of the best running backs in the country. And then kind of parallel to that, one of the best running backs in the SEC, which has kind of the same thing because Georgia had a couple really good backs. So
sure.
I am very pleased with Yeldon coming back. You know, I'm just very excited about what, you know, what he brings to us and just the dynamic play that we're going to get from him. I think it becomes a question, and it's different than quarterback because you typically play one quarterback, you know, when the game's on the line. Running back under Saban, we rotate. And so I look at the number two quarterback in the rotation as a virtual star. You have a chance for a big day if you can demonstrate yourself. So who do you think gets into that second spot? I think the leader, I think, is Drake. Henry's kind of knocking at the door. But who do you think has the best shot there?
You know, if Henry wouldn't have had his leg injury in the spring, I would have definitely said it was going to be Derrick Henry. I mean, this kid broke the record for the most yards of any running back to have ever played high school football. And why is he at Alabama? Because of Nick Saban. And so take nothing away from Kenyon Drake, nothing. But it is just a matter of time before Derrick Henry, with his rare athleticism, his frame, his speed, his agility, he is the full package. I think he will be, you know, T.J. Yeldon is a different type of back. T.J. Yeldon is different than Trent Richardson. He is different than Mark Ingram.
Yes. Yes.
Derrick Henry will also go down as a different type of back. I think Derrick Henry will go down before he is said and done as a little bit of a T.J. Yeldon, a Trent Richardson, and a Mark Ingram. I actually think from what I expect him to do, because we haven't seen it yet. So let me back up.
Sure.
In the A-Day game last year, very quickly, I was there in person to witness T.J. Yeldon catch a ball across the middle on a dump pass. He left C.J. Mosley in his dust, and C.J. Mosley couldn't even get his jersey as he went for a touchdown. I knew then T.J. Yeldon was someone special. I have not gotten to see Derrick Henry flash that yet because he got hurt, and we didn't get to see him in A-Day game. So the pub on him, the expectation on a guy who has broken the rushing record for all of high school football, okay, and he's what, 240 pounds, is that he is going to have elements of a Mark Ingram, a Trent Richardson, and a T.J. Yeldon. So I guess I need to back up and backpedal and reserve that. Let me see him in the first couple of games before I say that in a podcast. So right now, it deserves to be Kenyon Drake. He has earned it. And so Kenyon Drake will come in on the second or third series of the Virginia Tech game. Yes. But he better look over his shoulder because in practice, Derrick Henry is going to be nipping at his heels.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. And I think Kenyon comes in with a couple of advantages, you know, experience, you know, a year in the system. He did play and had some success on the field last year. He didn't get injured, so he got to complete spring drills and play in A-Day. And he did not spend the summer rehabbing an injury. He spent the summer sort of building off of his base of performance. So I think that he sort of has the trifecta there of advantage. But Derrick Henry is a unique specimen. His size and strength and skill and athleticism, he's not like a fullback. You think of 240, well, he's a fullback. Derrick Henry's not just an inflated running back that's a fullback. Derrick Henry's just a bigger man.
Yes.
We have a buddy named Chad, and back when Lennox Lewis was kind of breaking out in boxing, he, you know, Lennox Lewis is just so big, and he described Lennox Lewis as, he's like a man, only bigger. You know, you take a picture and you say, I want that to be 50% larger. Well, all the aspects, all the ratios, everything remains the same. It's just bigger. Well, Lennox Lewis was that. He was just bigger. And Derrick Henry is that. If you look at him, his proportions, his structure, he looks like a guy, just bigger. And I think that if he has that carryover athleticism, which there's no reason you don't, you know, lead the nation all time in high school rushing and not have the athleticism, I think that he's going to step in. And coaches are going to salivate for the opportunity for him to get in there. And I don't want to default back to this sort of as you know, my theme this season. But I think maybe he doesn't platoon at the number two, but the number three running back plays a bigger role this year than it probably ever has.
That's a good point. And last year when Jalston Fowler went down, who was going to be our number three guy, I think you made a good point that the spread, the zone read that Blake Sims brought in was Nick Saban just coming up with another great way to take the air out of the ball. And so if you're a defense in this schedule that they have this year and you're getting pounded in the fourth quarter and Derrick Henry gets to come in, oh my goodness, he is going to be able to put up some good stats in the fourth quarter.
Yes. Yes. I completely agree. He's going to be the kind of guy that the defense is going to say, holy my goodness, I've got to face this guy now.
Yes.
Do they have anyone that looks like me?
Yes.
You know, that's going to come in, and we're still going to be bringing in, you know, Derrick Henry. And of course, Joseph, we'll get to his position, but, you know, sure. Jalston Fowler will still play a role, and he'll still carry the ball. He'll still line up in the backfield as well as other positions. We've got a trio of freshmen coming in. Alti Tenpenny probably right now looks the best, kind of maybe leading the way for four. Tyron Jones had a couple of good runs, a touchdown in today's scrimmage. Alvin Kamara had a very minor knee scope this week, similar to what Mark Ingram had a couple years ago before the 2010 season. So he could probably go this year. I might look at them in that order of play. Another approach is to say, look, we got behind even Derrick Henry, we have three talented freshmen coming in. So we really have, you know, four talented freshmen running back, which, you know, who in the country really could say that? You know, all top 100, all four star or above. Who do you think kind of emerges, you know, either in special teams or running the ball out of that group?
Man, you know, as you were sitting here saying this, the first thing I just had to sit here and think about is poor D Hart. And when I say poor D Hart, I guess let me answer your question. I think D Hart's going to be that guy.
Okay.
Because D Hart has shown a toughness and a grit and a heart about him to just kind of stay around. And so as you just sat there and read Tyron Jones and Kamari and Tenpenny, right? And they were all very heralded guys coming out of high school last year. Imagine if you're D Hart. They signed four true freshmen running backs, including Derrick Henry. And Derrick Henry was the top of the class, but these other three were very highly regarded sure. running backs. And you're D Hart. And you were a five-star at your position just the year before. And so I guess what I will say is I think a D Hart, I can't wait to see him to see what kind of how he looks as far as his build goes. But I remember last year in A-Day game, he reminded me of a small Trent Richardson. He didn't have the size of Trent, but he was a you know, a tough bowling ball type of figure. And he showed some, I thought he showed some really good flashes on the punt return, and what he brought to that game before he got hurt. So not to jump in special teams real quick, I'm just going to say that I think DeHart's place is going to be in that special teams role, and I think he's going to thrive in it this year.
No, we're landing at the same spot, and I intentionally went through the rest of the freshmen before DeHart because I think he does lose in the shuffle at the running back position. Will he get carries? Yeah, he'll get carries. Will they be meaningful carries to him, but not to the program, not to, you know, the advancement, the outcome of a particular ball game? I think his opportunity is going to come best in special teams. And he had carved out a name as a gunner and in catching, you know, in some punt return situations. So I think the opportunity that DeHart will have to grasp and excel will be on special teams. I think that he is a deep roster guy at the running back position.
Oh yeah. But I think once again, right, the rich get richer, right? If you can have a stud from Florida, five-star recruit who can come in and solidify your special teams so that you don't have to have some of these other guys in that role, man, how cool is that?
No, I think that's phenomenal. I want to before we move on, I've said some praise for Kenyon Drake. I think that he has an opportunity to shine for us, but I want to kind of nip at his heels a little bit too. All of the pictures that I've seen, all of the stills that I've seen from fall camp, when they show the running backs, and there's one really nice picture of all of them lined up. It looks like just an incredible, you know, all of running backs, a lot of talent there. And I noticed it especially in that picture, and I think I have it, you know, primed to post in our show notes. All of the running backs in that picture and all the pictures that I've seen have the ball cradled. They have the one tip of the ball between their index finger and their middle finger. They have the other tip of the ball tucked in their elbow, and they have it cradled up to their body. All of them, you know, and if they have a propensity to right hand or left hand, then that's kind of an interpersonal decision. But they all have the ball cradled in that way, which is really impressive because that's they're not doing that, you know, just because that's how they carry them. You know, repetition. That's coaching. That's a response, yep, to drilling and in response to instruction. And I'll say this about Drake, and maybe it means nothing, and maybe it means everything. The only pictures of running backs that I see carrying the ball any different than high and tight cradled is Kenyon Drake.
Interesting. Okay. I think that does mean something.
Well, these are still photos out of hours and hours of practice. So, you know, it doesn't have to mean a darn thing. But I'll say this. He's the only one that I've seen with pictures down. And the sort of the aggravating thing that I have about Kenyon last year is before the Western Carolina game in November, where clearly he was the guy in the pecking order. I don't know what he did. You and I speculated maybe he missed a class or something. We don't know. But he was suspended from that game and didn't get to play. Now, Western Carolina is a team that we blew out, and there was no question. And as the number three running back in November, we're talking November. This is the game before the Auburn game. And so in that game, you know that Lacey's going to get a handful of carries. We want to get him out of the game. Yeldon is firm in the rotation. He's not proven anything. We want him out of the game. So it's an opportunity for Kenyon Drake to own the day.
Yes.
And he does something, gets suspended for that game. And I went back and looked this up. Callaway, who's no longer on the team, but Callaway was shifted from halfback back to running back because now we need a running back. He had 7 carries that day. Ben Howard had 5 carries that day. Eddie Lacy had to work probably a little more than he would have. He had 10 carries. And Blake, you know, some of these could have been in his zone read, but he had 8 carries. And so you think, man, Kenyon Drake, 12, 15 carries, 100 yards. I mean, he had like 230, 250 for the season. He could have had a $125 that day. And right. So I'm not trying to make this more than it is, but no, there's two things there.
Yes.
There's just two things there that just – man, I hope that he just gets, I hope that's not two dots that connect. I hope it's two completely random different dots and that I'm the one trying to make something up. But when I see those two things, that's what comes to my mind.
No, that just makes you wonder about the decision making. And, you know, everybody makes mistakes and everybody can learn from them. You know, he's still a youngster. So hopefully he'll learn from that and what happened last year, because he did show some good explosion. You know, when he came in recruited, he was running a 4.4. He's got a decent frame to him at 6'1", 200 pounds. You know, he showed some good flashes. He seemed very comfortable on the edge. A lot of those touchdowns and mop-up duty came on the edge and on the sweep plays. He brought an element of speed there to those, you know, to those plays. And I think he can have a good year. But the point about the ball, you know, the ball security and how he was holding that ball, you know, I've seen those drills many times on those videos in the indoor practice facility. And, you know, they do that repetition for a reason. So it'll be curious to see what happens there.
Yep. Yep.
Hey, throw us over to a wide receiver. What do you think? Let's start with that guy that a lot of people might not have heard of, Amari Cooper.
Yeah, he's new to the team, right? Only his second year.
Can you believe that he was just a 4-star? You know, it's funny about these star ratings, but, you know, when you look back at that class, TJ Yeldon and Landon Collins and Eddie Williams were the 5-stars. And, oh, by the way, Chris Black was actually was supposed to be a bigger name prospect coming in than Cooper. And we didn't get to really see Black the way we wanted to. But let's start with Cooper. Man, just like a TJ Yeldon, man, what would we have done without him at that position last year?
Well, yeah, and he was phenomenal. We got dinged up at that position. You know, Black missed the season due to injury. Norwood was in and out for the season. He was injured. You know, DeAndre White went out with the knee. Bell later in the season went down. And so all of that happened. Amari Cooper was you know, lights out, phenomenal, you know, sensational. And he might be, and it seemed like, you know, was it Daniel Jeremiah, a former NFL scout, works for, you know, NFL.com. I think, you know, he rated, you know, the top players, you know, with an eye towards the pro, but the top players in college football. And I think he had Amari Cooper on the list, in the top 50. And so this is a guy that's universally considered one of the best receivers, if not the best receiver in college football, which is pretty impressive when you think about Sammy Watkins and some of the other guys. And then he lit it up in the first scrimmage. He had 4 catches. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but he had 4 catches for at least a buck 50. Maybe it was a buck 70, you know, multiple touchdowns.
It jumped out at you. It jumped out at your stats. Yes. Yeah,
just off the chart. Now we, you know, which stats do we release and which do we not? But we don't fabricate stats. We just may not release them all. But so he got those stats. So that's pretty darn impressive. Now, since then, he's had a dinged foot and he hasn't really participated. I think it's a bubble wrap situation. Hey, we know what you can do. You know, go ride the bike. Let's, you know, go work with Cochran and, you know, let's keep your conditioning where it needs to be. But on this field over here, we know what you can do.
Well, I agree with that. And, you know, when we talked about AJ a minute ago, we talked about, you know, what he brings to the table and the riches of what he was being surrounded by. This is the deepest wide receiver core on paper that Nick Saban has ever had at Alabama.
I know. I agree with you. When we went through last season and we did this sort of thing last season and we broke down position and we gave, you know, grades, I think I gave a 10 out of 10 at wide receiver or maybe a 9 out of 10 at wide receiver. And the only reason I didn't go, I think I went 9.5 out of 10. And the only reason I didn't go higher is because we didn't have, you know, a name brand at the top, you know, like a Hulu. Well, guess what? Not only do we now have the name brand at the top in Amari Cooper, we have everyone back. Everyone. Yeah. We did not lose a receiver. They're all back. Amari clearly is the breakout guy. And then we've added to it Falcons and Robert Lester and our Darius Stewart. It's like, can you go 11 out of 10?
Well, to me, the big key here, okay, is Amari Cooper going to regress this year? Sure, he's going to regress. But is he going to regress because he's not getting even more talented? No. He's going to regress because DeAndre White is back. He's going to regress because Kevin Norwood stepped into the national championship game against LSU, and he can bring it some. He's going to regress because the other senior, Kenny Bell, can bring it. And he's going to regress because Chris Black is chewing his mouthpiece in half to wait to get to that first football game and show that I was just as highly recruited coming out of Florida as my boy Amari Cooper.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I'm – and oh, by the way, listeners, we haven't even talked about Chris John Jones, who brings so much to this football team with being able to line up at all the different wide receiver positions. We could have a whole show that just talks about this position.
No, and we absolutely could. And I think I have a couple of bold statements at the wide receiver position. And I don't think this is over the top. I think you could say more than my bold statements, but here they are. This is the most talented group of wide receivers that we've ever had at the University of Alabama.
That you and I've ever seen, for sure. No doubt.
At least that we've ever seen, but much, I think yes. Probably ever. And then I'll say this, and I want to make sure I say this the right way because I don't want you to get the wrong impression. But if you look at Amari, a sophomore, had exactly 1,000 yards last year. And look, he didn't come on. He was not Amari Cooper day one.
No.
You know, he was games into the season before he really saw action. And so he could regress and still put up better numbers.
Sure.
Right? And sure. So you take Amari Cooper, Kevin Norwood is senior, Kenny Bell is senior. So they've both played quite a bit. DeAndre White has had a couple seasons under his belt, was having his best season last year before he was injured.
Yes.
Chris John Jones has played. He's going to be a junior. Now, Black hasn't played. Falcons hasn't played. Robert Foster hasn't played. So it's you almost have to take them out of what I'm about to say. But if you take all of these guys who have contributed at wide receiver, every one of them can have their best season to date this year.
Now that right there is a great statement. And when we talk about this wide receiver position, okay, especially since Coach Saban has been there, right? It's always been relying on one guy to be the guy. And the running game has to carry us, right? And now listen to what we're saying. We've got the running game, or we got the running backs that we think can produce like a TJ Yeldon. We've got the quarterback who takes care of the football and, oh, by the way, is a two-time defending national champion. But then, like you said, we have got several guys who have demonstrated on the field that they can get it done. That's what I'm most excited about. DeAndre White has shown flashes at Alabama. Kenny Bell has shown flashes. Kevin Norwood has shown flashes. So to me, Amari Cooper can kind of sit back and pick his spots.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, let's go back to the couple years ago, not the big way back machine, but just a couple years ago when we had, the 3 years that we had Julio, even his freshman year and certainly going into his sophomore. And I think we started the podcast his sophomore year and then his senior season. You know, listeners that have followed us through this time are probably tired of hearing us say this back in that time. And it was certainly something that the media wrote about. Who's going to be the receiver that emerges opposite of Julio, right?
Right.
Well, this year, what's the translation of that question? Who? And then the answer always then was, who's opposite of Julio? Well, we don't know. This year, the question is, who's opposite of Cooper? And the answer is, I don't know. Take your pick. Who do you want?
Yes.
Who do you want it to be?
Yes.
Because we got a list.
Well, and that's where your breakout of our preview of the Alabama football season for 2013, where you touched on all the four and five wide receiver sets. You know, I think we got to touch on this very quickly. Okay. This year's team is going to be able to be so multiple in how they come at you and where they line these wide receivers up, because you got two seniors and a junior that know what they're doing, and they know the offense, and they know their role. And then you fit in an Amari Cooper, and then you fit in a Chris Black. Oh, my goodness. I mean, just think of all the combinations of the four sets and the five sets and the three guys lined up on one side. I mean, there's just so many different things that we can do with an experienced quarterback and these guys.
Absolutely. And if there's any question, I want to work this in, because this is sort of a hero performance that has gone by the wayside. TJ Yeldon without question, was a hero of last year's LSU game.
No doubt. We don't win the game without him.
Absolutely. One of the things that we talked about in the podcast, and you can't find referenced anywhere, but on the three consecutive plays before Yeldon did what he did, Norwood made first down passes, made first down catches.
Yes.
On the sideline to get out of bounds and stop the clock. And so you think about three crisp catches along the sidelines, moving the chains, getting out of bounds, stopping the clock. All of the, you know, it's, you know, if you think about what really does it take to for a 2-minute drill to succeed, there are so many integral parts that you just don't even think about. What he did was, you know, amazing is not the word to recognize it. And then what happens, you know, if nothing else, that help opens up the coverage for what we did with TJ. I take nothing away from what TJ did. I just want to make sure Norwood gets his. And so when we talk about, you know, the plethora of guys coming back, Norwood's not a household name, but damn, he ought to be.
No, that's true. That's true. And hey, let's jump to tight end for a second, because we talked about this on you know the podcast several times week in and week out last year. And so for most Bama fans, as they're kind of getting ready for the season like we are, guys, let's all just stop. And let's just cry in private. Nobody's got to see us crying. Damn, Michael Williams is gone. And guys, y'all are going to realize how big of a loss that was. When we talk about how lucky we've been at the quarterback position, we've been lucky that we've had Michael Williams for 3 years.
Hey, Saban this week, and this is a little bit bittersweet, pat ourselves on the back. Saban this week, and Tommy, I've never heard him talk quite in these terms, but he referenced Michael Williams and said, that's a tough guy to replace. And so here he is more than halfway through this year's camp, and he's just commenting on how hard a player Michael Williams was to replace. First of all, have you ever heard him say that about a player that's gone?
No, I
have not. And I'll pat your back if you'll pat mine. That's something that we talked about a couple times last season.
Well, this goes back to the development of players, right? Because he came in to be on the defensive side of the ball. And this guy, he knew his frame would grow. He knew that he was going, he knew he had a big frame that could hold the weight. And so as the guy's weight grew, he was a smart guy. And, you know, he has been so integral for this team. And obviously, I don't want to make this about Michael Williams because we need to talk about the current players that are there. But what he did that was so key was when Jostin Fowler got hurt, because Michael Williams suddenly had to put on another hat.
Yep.
He already had the blocking tight end. He already had the pass catching tight end, but now I need you to be the fullback. Yep. And can you pull? Can you do the trap block, and can you pull around the end on the sweep play, etc.? And so what I think Coach Saban has found is, oh my gosh, last year I had one guy that could play three different positions, and I don't have that guy right now.
No, we don't. And that's not to necessarily disparage who we have. I like Brian Vogler. I like Harrison Jones. I think they're going to be okay guys. But they are guys that were brought in as pass-catching tight ends.
Yes.
And there's almost a philosophy, and I looked at this a little bit. There's almost a philosophy that we seem to have had in recruiting tight ends that basically says, look, find the big guy that can run routes and catch the ball. Find that guy in recruiting, and we'll figure out the blocker.
We brought over,
you know, what is it, Undra Billingsley to play the blocking tight end. You mentioned, yes, Michael Williams probably was brought in with the intention of really just being the blocker and let, yes, a pass-catching guy be the pass-catching guy. You know, we brought over, and he's since moved back to defensive end, but LaMichael Fanning to try to be that guy. We've moved a tackle over this year. It's like, look, damn it, we don't have someone. Just put a tackle over there.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead and talk about Brandon Green. I mean, now, right? Go ahead and tell the listeners what's just recently happened with Brandon Green.
Yeah, I mean, he's been practicing at that at that tight end position. I didn't think a whole lot about it until his number changed.
Yeah, and this is a guy that
now he's 89, so he doesn't have to check in to be at the end of the line of scrimmage, which, you know, that's just a little thing. But, you know, now he's officially at that position. He doesn't have to check in with the refs to be the last man on the line of scrimmage. So that tells me that he's just not getting reps at and an extra blocker. He's really getting reps at the tight end.
And what's so ingenious about this to me, if you believe the depth charts, right, and you have to go with what some people see as the depth chart, some people will say that he is the guy behind Cyrus at left tackle. And so at 6'5", 307 pounds as a redshirt freshman, right, if you have the hands and the feet to play left tackle, and you're currently, by some people, penciled in behind Cyrus, who is going to be gone in about 13, 14 games, mm-hmm. then putting him in at 6'5", 307 at that blocking tight end that, as you said, Saban just goes and finds him, to me is ingenious. Because sure. Guess what? He's going to learn the playbook, and he's going to learn the blocking schemes and the techniques, and he's going to be lining up right beside Cyrus. So if he truly will fall into that, you know, spot, right, what better to do than go line up right beside him now for the next 14 games?
Well, and he'll get to line up on both sides.
Sure.
So you really, I mean, come on. You know, I don't want to overstate Saban's genius, but he gets to audition at the right and left tackle.
He does. He does.
He's going to be at the end of the line of scrimmage.
But no offense to Vogler, okay? And no offense to, because Brian Vogler, I think, did a really good job when he was thrust into the role of coming in at the goal line and blocking. Okay.
Yeah.
And so I think he is going to be one of those guys in the two tight end. Okay. And so you and I need to have a discussion now, because it's long overdue to bring in Jostin Fowler into this podcast. But who is going in the two tight end setup? Is it going to be Brian Vogler and Brandon Green?
I think yes. I think if you just went pure two, you know, if you're going tight end and halfback, I'm going to say no. But if you're going pure two tights, yes, I would say Brandon and Vogler. And I'll tell you what, when that second tight end as a blocker, you bring in a second tight end as a blocker, you don't have to be as good of a blocker as the first tight end.
Sure.
To be effective. And so when Vogler was coming in with Williams, he was good.
He was that second guy, and he can was still good. Be that second guy.
But if you're bringing in Vogler as the first one, and then you're bringing in someone with Vogler, well, that's not as good. And so, I think Coach said, look, Brandon Green, we're going to solve a couple things at once here. Put him in there.
Oh, sure. And it goes back to when Saban first got there, and we didn't have those blocking tight ends, and we were beat on the edges at the goal line because we were just out-muscled. And so this, to me, is the genius. This is another, you know, sure, this is a Saban commercial, but heck, I don't care. He's the best coach out there. This is another example of how he gets it in the running game by having that six offensive lineman who is a tight end. And can, so did I hear correct that Brandon Green played basketball in high school?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so he does have hands. And so there can be that threat out there that he can do something. But to your point, at 307 pounds, he's going to give you that beef lined up next to Cyrus when we run it down your throat from the two-yard line that a Brian Vogler at 260 can't bring.
Yeah. Can you see the coaching meeting when, you know, the tight ends coach, you know, say, you know, coach, we just can't find the one that can block. We just can't find the one that can block. And he lowers his glasses down at his nose and he looks at him and says, why don't you just put a tackle there?
Yeah, let's just take our backup left tackle. Exactly. No, that's hilarious.
Well, we just saw for that.
That's hilarious.
And I think that, you know, we've gone through all the tight end talk, and we've not talked about the most dynamic tight end, which is going to be O.J. Howard. He has the opportunity to bring something to the offense out of that position that we've not seen in a long time.
No, we haven't. And, you know, he's looked good so far. He looked good at the A-Day game. But I'm very encouraged that he comes in this year. I'm so happy that he's not coming in next year, because this year he gets to come in with an experienced fifth-year senior quarterback, and he is not going to be expected to do diddly because we have so many other weapons. He can just fly under the radar.
Sure.
And how perfect. How perfect is that for the number one or two tight end out of high school to come into a situation where he doesn't have to be the guy?
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think it's phenomenal. It's an opportunity for him to get his legs under him with a quarterback that can kind of bring him along. And then next year, he'll maybe be in position to help bring the quarterback along. And that, you know, and that's important. I think he has the opportunity to be so dynamic and so versatile, you know, to our offense. I think that he's the type of receiver, you know, through the recruiting process, he wanted to be viewed as a wide receiver. He wanted to be recruited as a wide receiver. And it's like, look, dude, you're a little too big for that. But, you know, we can line, you know, we can motion you out in the slot and keep defensive coordinators up at night debating on, do we guard him with a safety or a corner or a linebacker? And where are we picking our poison on the mismatch?
Oh, sure. And let me just quickly touch on Harrison and Kurt and Malcolm. For those guys, they're going to bring a lot to our game in special teams. And yes. So when we talk about the depth at wide receiver, as you look at these names at the tight end position, this, you know, granted, losing Michael Williams was huge, but we got a lot of parts here that back in the days when a Kelly Johnson came up and we're like, who is Kelly Johnson, right? He's also improving the talent at this position too, because we got a lot of guys here that are 6'4", 265, 270 that I think are going to really help us this year.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, Malcolm Fekane has to take care of some things, but he was heralded as a blocker in college in high school. And so he's only a sophomore. He gets his head on straight, you know, really develops and progresses this season. You know, he could really be something. You know, Kurt Freetag could be, you know, a rich man's Kelly Johnson if he'll just apply himself. He's only a redshirt freshman. So I think that, you know, and I'm not mad at Vogler and Harrison, who are both juniors.
Sure.
I just think we needed the big blocker.
And some girls.
All of these guys really were brought in, you know, with the exception of, you know, Malcolm, who maybe just isn't, you know, performing up to, and he's, like I said, he's only a sophomore. But I think we just needed the blocker. We needed the big body over there. And so tackle over there that'll you know, give him some opportunity. And then we'll see where that puts us in terms of bringing these guys along. I don't think that, you know, if I were to grade this position, I think I'd give it an incomplete just because we do have so many of these variables. I think it's quickly going to settle down.
We got to talk some Austin Fowler here.
Yes.
I mean, you and I love this kid.
I love this dude.
We hate, you love him more than I do. It's a big man crush. But this guy is, he doesn't bring everything to the game that a Derrick Henry will bring, I think. But at 6'1", 250, he brings a heck of a lot to the game. And before he got hurt, I was just so excited to see where they were going to put him in the puzzle for that particular game plan. And so we can obviously bring him along slowly because of the knee injury. He does not have to be rushed in here, just like we said about O.J. Howard. But how do you see them working this guy in? I mean, this guy's a very talented player.
This guy's phenomenal. I don't know that I said this out loud, but I certainly was afraid that when he went down and the versatility that he brought and that he had demonstrated, and that frankly we had only tipped the tip of the iceberg on what he really could have done last year, I thought that might be the injury. We've gotten through injuries, you know, every year. This might be the one we can't get past because of the versatility that he brings, and it takes so many guys to replace the roles that he could have.
Oh, I think had Michael Williams not stepped in and done what Michael Williams always does, you would have been exactly correct on that.
And that could be, you know, that could be that we did find, you know, out of the five, I think we broke it down. There's five different, you know, positions that Fowler could line up and then sort of motion into, and that we need multiple guys to do that. And the fact that we found Michael Williams that in one person, because look, you can bring five different guys in, but then you're tipping your hand. You're not multiple. You're not multiple at the line of scrimmage. You're multiple, you know, whoever's in the huddle. And so bringing a Michael Williams in to say, look, we have some of that multiplicity, not all, but some of it. And so, you know, and so that becomes at least a softer landing spot. So I agree with you there. But my point with Fowler, He's actually dropped some weight, and so he's down, you know, closer to 240. And man, okay. he looks robust. He looks, you know, fit. And I think we've got a picture that we're going to put on with our show notes. He really looks good, and he, you know, moving and healthy and ready to contribute. I think our opportunity to be so multiple on offense is just, you know, we could come in with, you know, basically a two tight end look with Fowler and Howard and motion them both out. And then now we're five wide. Well, how do you go from two tight end to five wide? Just because we can do that. Just because we got these guys. And, you know, sorry. You know, right. So you can run as many, you know, no huddle, fast paced plays as you can. Defend this.
Oh, sure. No, it's, do you see, how many touches do you see him get in a game?
Well, that's.
Or just, how do you see him getting worked in right now? Because it was a whole different scenario. I guess what I'm saying is that who is that fourth quarter guy? Is it going to be him or is it going to be Derrick Henry?
Yes. I think it's going to be a little bit of both. And so
how fun will that be? Yeah.
Here's 500 pounds running back and one's catching passes out of the backfield and one's running between the guards. And I'm a redshirt dude. I'm just trying to, you know, keep my scholarship. I got to tackle one of these guys. I mean, that's right. What you're going to find late in games. You know, we're going to score. You know, we've seen Saban get, you know, just jump up and mad frantic when we score a touchdown late in the game when he really doesn't want to score any more points. Shoot, man. How many times is he going to do that this season?
I am so glad you brought that up because busting one from midfield up the middle with Henry or Fowler, oh my gosh, you know, both at 240 pounds. Yeah, we need to have the over-under on that.
Hey, and that's
got to be at least like three or four.
That's not outrageous because it was Jostin Fowler who broke, what, a 50 or 60 yard against Michigan State when we blew them out of the Capital One Bowl. And literally, Saban was pissed off. Like, sure. What are we doing scoring on a dive play with a 250-pound running back?
Absolutely correct.
Well, hey, it's their job to tackle us.
That is absolutely correct. Hey, let's talk a little offensive line, man. That's the elephant in the room on this podcast.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
We started with the easy stuff. We should have started with the hard crap. So this is our Achilles heel, right? Isn't this what's going to keep us from repeating again?
Oh, man. I'm going to tell you what. Here's what I tell people about the offensive line. You cannot compare this year's line to last year's line.
Oh, you're going to tell me some more.
Last year's line was wide. This is not me as a Bama fan. This is national media.
Okay.
Widely heralded last year's offensive line as one of, if not the best offensive lines in the history of college football.
Even better than the Pancake Posse.
Well, thanks for that. And so you can't compare. If you compare this year's line to last year's line, it's not going to be as good. It's not going to match up. It's just
let me just say real quick, I have even read that people said about last year's starting five that you were looking at five future NFL starters on last year's team between those five guys.
It very well could be. I mean, there's three of them in the league now.
Right.
I don't know where Barrett is necessarily in the lineup, but I would not be surprised to see him earn some starts. You know, Cyrus is going to be considered one of the top left tackles in this year's. And so you think where he goes, he's going to have a front line. And hey, Steen, man.
Dude, I've seen him projected as the second or third guard in the mock draft for next year.
You're going to have to come off some Steen love.
So tell me what you think here. Tell the listeners about this recent development with Austin Shepherd and Airy. I think that's some interesting stuff.
Look, I went into, you know, thinking across the line we'd see Cyrus, Ari, Ryan Kelly at center, Steen at his right guard spot, and then Austin Shepherd at the right tackle position. And the biggest question I had at that lineup was Ari, and it was more a function of his injury history. He's had, you know, surgery on both of his knees. And is this guy going to come back, or is he going to be a BJ Stabler and says, look, I just can't do this anymore? Or is he going to be able to come back? Well, he has come back to the point where this week, you know, Saban's like, you know, We thought he was going to lose some speed, some flexibility, some mobility. It's back. Why don't we put him at tackle? And so we flipped. Put him back at right tackle, flipped him with Austin on the inside. And then Saban has come out and said, well, Ari's our second best tackle on the team. And so he's opposite, you know, obviously his brother. And so I look at it as simple math, right? If you take five numbers and you add them together and then you average them and you get that number, you get whatever that number is, then you take the lowest of those five numbers and you raise it to become the second highest number, then you re-average those five numbers. Your average, I mean, it's dumb, right? It's obvious. The average is going to be higher. Well, translating to these five linemen, you take what I thought, and I'll own that. I thought the weakest link at the offensive line was going to be Ari Quanjo. And so all of a sudden, if he's the second best tackle on the team, you've taken what I thought was our weakest link across the offensive line, made him one of the stronger links on the offensive line, and left everyone else the same. The average capability of the offensive line has increased significantly.
Man, let me first comment that you have lost half of our listeners on this podcast with that math rendition.
I didn't think there'd be math.
Okay, all right, but I get you. I see what you're saying there. I thought going into the spring that Leon Brown was going to be that typical JUCO tackle, right? Because Saban doesn't sign you out of JUCO unless you're going to come in and be one of those starters. That's kind of been the drill, right?
Can I just put this out there?
Sure.
Saban has proven that he's not infallible. And I'm not knocking a guy, come on. But he's proven that he's not infallible on the JUCO. We had Travell Dixon last year. Leon Brown, I'm sorry. People are saying that he's coming on in fall camp. He's got a long way to come, you know, to crack the rotation. And so we've had worse recruiting at JUCO, but, you know, and Saban's pretty darn good at it. And he's brought in some guys that have come in and performed. And, you know, we wouldn't have won in 09 if it wasn't for, you know, James Carpenter.
Oh, sure.
So, I'm not knocking. I'm just saying, hey, it's not infallible in the way that we once thought it was. And, you know, Leon Brown is the poster child for that.
Oh, sure. And you know, when you, there's still time, right? He's got 3 years, okay, of eligibility.
We said this about Kendrick Lott, man. Anytime you have to redshirt a JUCO,
something's I'm with not you. Right. I'm with you. But my point is when this occurred and Austin Shepherd got the nod, okay, and they moved Ari to left guard from right tackle, I didn't feel as good about right tackle. Okay. Take nothing away from Austin Shepherd, because once again, he's playing at a level that I never played at.
Look, I had pegged him as a guard. And so yes. When we moved him out, I was like, okay.
And then we were reaching, right? It felt like we were reaching a little bit.
A little bit. But then I got to thinking, I said, look, we've won a national title with Drew Davis at right tackle.
Exactly.
So if Austin can come in and be Drew Davis, we can win with the rest of this line. Now, if we've moved, you know, Shep back to what maybe is, you know, inside his better position, and Ari back to really what's his better position, right tackle. That's what we recruited him to be. And he has his mobility and his health back. We've just swapped guys and made the line better.
Oh, sure. And then if we can bring someone like a Kellen Williams in with the senior leadership that he has, and he can be a guy that can be in a backup role. And then, oh, by the way, going back to Brandon Green for a second, when he was signed in 2012, he was a four-star guy. He was like one of the top 30 offensive linemen in the country. And so, once again, right, if he comes on, right, you've got that ability to maybe float him in, you know, if need be at right tackle or whatever, if something happens with Ari, which, you know, I hope it doesn't. But you got some moving parts there that you can work with. I think your better point is I saw Shepherd as a guard. And so I'm a lot more comfortable putting him next to Cyrus than having him out there on an island at right tackle.
I really like what we've opened up in terms of our flexibility. And what I thought was a potential weakness on the offensive line, all of a sudden, with a couple of these moves, and it sort of hinges on, you know, Ari being, you know, healthy and more athletic than he was. And then now this move of Brandon Green, it really opens up the flexibility, because if someone gets hurt, well, maybe your sixth best lineman is already on the field. And so Shepard, who has some flexibility, can move. Or maybe you take a Green and you move him down and you kind of pat him by the on the helmet and say, look, big fella, I'm not asking you to do anything that you haven't done on the last six plays. You're just going to do it a couple of steps over.
Well, let me touch on that real quick, okay? If you've got him outside of Cyrus, okay, and suddenly something happens to your point and you have to move Shepard back to right tackle where he's been playing, and you have to move Brandon Green in between Cyrus and Ryan, like you said, you're just moving him from the left side of Cyrus's behind to the right side of Cyrus's behind. That's all you're doing.
Sure, and that's if you move him at guard, because I actually think we have some guards coming on too. Alphonse Taylor, you know, redshirt freshman, is looking really good.
Dude, and we have to touch on this real quick. All of last year, when you and I would sit there and check out with the binoculars the players on the sideline, right? Who was the guy that we always looked at and said, oh my gosh, he's bigger than Warmack? And he's a true freshman.
Yeah, who's blotting out the sun over there on the sideline was, you know, was
Alphonse Taylor.
Was Alphonse. And so, you know, putting him at a guard position and just say, you know, bulldoze whoever's in, you know, imagine him with some simple zone block direction. You know, just go in there and bulldoze who's in front of you. You know, I'm going to run off your rear here. My point is, I think suddenly, because I wrote offensive line as one of my biggest concerns, you know, in the preseason guide. Suddenly, my story has changed on that, because all of a sudden I see some flexibility. I did not predict. I predicted Ari going the other way. I predicted maybe his career maybe winding down. I was more pessimistic, and so now it looks like no. He's about to blossom, which opens up this flexibility. And so now we have this weakness at tight end. Well, this bolster the offensive line by putting, you know, this tackle over there. And so now all of a sudden we have all kinds of flexibility. Now, when we talk about finding our sixth lineman, we only really have to say who's the next best guard. That's an easier find, man. That's an easier find.
It is an easier find. And I think the one position here we still have not touched on is Ryan Kelly. And so, you know, it's your time to shine. And so we know the story. We know he got all the reps before the national championship game because of Barrett Jones.
You can't undersell that.
We cannot undersell that. But and we know he looked good in the A-Day game. I'm just saying real quick that Barrett Jones and his ability to communicate the calls at center, or just in general, to any offensive line, but I think at Alabama, it's really, really important. And so I think Ryan Kelly brings the wits about him to do that. I think he's got the physical toughness in the run game. What I want to see is his ability to zone protect, to be able to pull when the center needs to pull on certain running plays, and have that agility. I don't know that he has the agility that a Barrett Jones did. Barrett Jones just knew how. He knew where to put his helmet. He knew where to position his body to make the block.
See, this is,
and I don't know if Ryan Kelly's got that yet.
This is where I want to be careful, right? Because what I say about the full offensive line translates to each of the individual players. You can't compare this year's offensive line to last year's offensive line, because last year's offensive line was one of the best ever. Okay, right. They're not going to measure on that.
Sure.
But can they be a good offensive line? Can they be a good college offensive line? Can they be a top 15 offensive line? Yes, they can be.
And can they be serviceable with a fifth-year senior quarterback who's won two national championships?
Right. With a wide receiver core that's gonna, you know, we don't have to be the bruising running game that we were last year because we have these wide receivers. And so all of that. Now, so Barrett Jones is one of those guys that through his career, he played all positions. He played every position across the offensive line. He won the Outland Trophy at tackle and then came back and won the Remington at center. Well, I don't think anyone's ever done that.
Correct.
I mean, in the history of
college football.
And those are the two most impressive position or, you know, awards across the offensive line. I mean, that's like a running back. I mean, everyone like knows the Heisman, the Heisman, right? But a lineman's not going to win the Heisman. But damn, the Allen Trophy is like as good as it gets.
Yes.
And at the center, you know, that's the Johnny Unitas. You know, that's the Doak Walker. That's the award you want for that position.
Right.
And he's won them both.
Right.
So he's got a full mantle. And so when you take a Ryan Kelly, you say, well, it's just not fair to compare him to Barrett Jones.
It's not.
Can he be a good center in his first year as a true sophomore? Yeah, I think he can.
That is the key. And he obviously cannot be compared to a Barrett Jones. And it's not fair.
Not yet. Let's come back in a year or two and see if maybe, this guy's pretty good, you know. But, I'm not going to hold him to that standard today.
Oh, no, that wouldn't be fair. And he, you know, when he came in, he was 270 pounds. Well, now he's 290 pounds. I'd like to see him get up there to, you know, to 300. When he came in out of high school, you know, center is his natural position. He mm-hmm. was the sixth best center in the country coming out. And so, you know, I guess what I'm saying with that is that I am comfortable that the guy we've got who has learned behind Barrett Jones is a natural center. This is what he wants to play. This is what he played for 4 years in high school. So it's not like we're moving a guard over there.
Right. Right. 100% agree. Any other thoughts on the offensive line?
No, man. Let's just kind of put a bow on this with the offense. What do you see as our breakout player on that side of the ball?
Well, let's pause just there before we kind of hit stars and fairies. What's your biggest question or concern across the offense?
On the offensive side of the ball, it's going to still have to be the offensive line.
Okay.
And I think it's probably going to have to hinge on Ari and what you just got through talking as an update, because Leon Brown is not there yet.
No.
Hope he will get there. But right now, if you are a two-time national championship football team, and in days before the second scrimmage in practice number 16, you are shuffling around your offensive line. Granted, they're good players. Granted, we got a full cupboard. But that is the only thing right now that could slow down this offense. I got to tell you real quick. I read a stat that said under Nick Saban, Alabama is 50-1 when they score 28 points or more. 50-1.
Mm-hmm.
This team should score 28 points or more each and every week as long as the offensive line just does Loman's work. And so Ari at right tackle, a la Drew Davis, okay, and what he did, I think is the biggest. Ari might be the most important player on the offensive side of the ball early on, and see how he does against Vautech.
I don't disagree with that, because when we talk about my tune changing so significantly across the offensive line, my tune changed based on him moving to tackle and demonstrating that he's the second best tackle on the team. And so all of sort of the optimism that I, you know, converted my angst to on the offensive line was based on that one transition. And so if sort of the floor falls out of that, then I'm back to maybe this being the biggest concern on the team. So that's fair.
Okay. What about for you?
I think AJ being healthy, but I think that's a given. I think any college football team is going to say their starting quarterback. So that's almost not that can't be the right answer, because there's not a team in the country that wouldn't be their concern. So okay. I was going to say versatility at the tight end, but I think you talked me into it. It's still being the offensive line. Just now, I think the ceiling is higher than I previously thought it was.
Okay, that's fair.
Now let's talk about breakout player. And you define breakout player how you want to. Across the offense, who is your breakout player or players?
Man, that's a tough one. Can I have two?
Go for it, man.
All right. my two players are going to be Chris Black and Jostin Fowler. I really want to say Derrick Henry. I think he's an easy one. Okay. But Derrick Henry, he's got to learn to play the game at this level. And Jostin Fowler already knows how to do that, and he knows how to do that very well. If you say he's not 6'1", 250, 6'1", 240 now, well, we're going to see a different Jostin Fowler than we even saw last year.
Yeah.
And so I think what he is going to bring to the game, lining up at fullback, hitting it up the middle for 10 yards, swinging out there on a pass out in the flats and running over a linebacker, you know, special teams play, whatever, goal line, whatever. I think he's going to pick up where he left off, and he's going to show us the versatility that you know wanted to see last year. And then Chris Black, man, he hasn't chewed through one mouthpiece. He's chewed through 10 mouthpieces. This kid truly is ready to light the fire on, man. He has got a fire under him, I would imagine, and he is ready to just take off. And all the pub about, is he going to play and is he going to practice before the Notre Dame game? You and I knew he wasn't going to play.
Sure.
He knew he wasn't going to play. But, dude, that's been freaking 8 months ago. He's ready to go.
Yeah.
And this kid at the A-Day game 2 years ago is the other guy that flashed. Amari Cooper did not flash in that A-Day game. T.J. Yeldon flashed.
Yep.
And Chris Black flashed.
Chris Black did.
And so he is ready to freaking shine.
Well, that's a good pick, and I certainly don't disagree with that. I think the menu option for breakout players is pretty phenomenal, and you know, Derrick Henry, I think, you know, that's sort of, everyone begs to, you know, to get to pick him as the breakout player. You know, look, he's a bigger running back, phenomenal guy. OJ Howard is another guy that people are gonna kind of cling to because he brings something to the tight end position that we haven't had. Raheem Falkins is the guy that people are gonna kind of migrate to. Big 6'4", tall receiver, can go over in the middle, big strong hands. All three of those guys, you know, kind of marinating this for a second. All three of those guys, true freshmen at their respective positions. And Tommy, we've won three of the last four national titles. A little bit of a working dynasty here. All three of those guys bring something to their respective positions that we have not seen.
Wow. That's fun to think about.
That is very fun to think about. Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But my breakout player is Kenyon Drake.
Really?
Yep.
So after you beat up on him about holding the damn football, you're going to circle back to him.
You know, and I've
wow.
No, I. You know, we've talked about, you know, Saban getting on a guy, and that's really a measure of how much confidence he has. You know, God, if this guy will just get it, he can be a star. And he'll ride the guy because that's the guy that needs to get it. I'm not going to coach a guy that's not going to contribute. I'm going to coach up the guy that is going to be the guy. And so, you know, Kenyon, I'll never hear what I have to say, but I'm kind of, this is the guy that can be the guy. This is it. This is the guy. And he just has to get his head on straight and needs to execute. But this is the guy that last year, and I talked about it, and you kind of chided me a little bit, and that's fair. This is the guy that he just looked like, the way he glided with the ball and the way he just sort of, you know, weaved his way, you know, through the line of scrimmage and through traffic, just effortlessly, like water going downhill, like water flowing downhill. It was just natural the way that he moved and flowed, reminded me of Sean Alexander.
I thought that you're about to say, yep.
And this is a guy that, if you know, and Sean Alexander didn't like pass blocking either. You know, Gene Stallings didn't want to play him because he wouldn't pass block. And then he broke, you know, 270-yard runs against LSU. And it's like, I got to figure out how to cover for him not being able to block because he could damn sure run. And so it's kind of like that with Kenyon. Block a little bit, man, just a little bit. Show that you want to learn how to pass block so you can stay in and run the ball and be a hero running the ball.
Right.
And then make it so we can't take you out of the game. It's like, I just want to grab him and say, look, you don't have to be the best blocker. You just have to be, you just demonstrate some effort.
Just
demonstrate
be serviceable. Effort,
yep. And then you'll get the chance to carry the ball and go to class. Don't right. get, you know, on the game that you're going to be the hero, don't skip a class. You know, don't right. miss a lab.
Right.
And so I don't know that's what he did. That's just, you know, that's just my talk. But my point is, dude has the talent. He was a 4-star out of this, you know, out of Georgia.
The dude has the talent. I think he can be a star. And so he's the guy that I think can just really blossom and blow up this year. And so he's my breakout player.
Okay.
Was this fun?
Man, this was fun, man. This is long overdue. We should have done this crap like a month or two ago.
This was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed this. So we're going to wrap up here. Our next show, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about defense. I want to throw something out. If you've been listening this long, then you deserve an opportunity for something really cool. If you subscribe to our emails or you visit our website, and I know not everyone does, that's fine. But we've put out what I think and our feedback is a really good preseason guide, and we call it the 2013 Alabama Viewing Guide. It's available for immediate download on our website. It's 45 pages of very rich content. You name the price. If you want to download it for free, download it for free. If you want to chip us a few bucks to cover the cost of this podcast, hey, we appreciate that too. But it's available there on the site for immediate download. And we're going to do something really cool for those fans who download the guide, not download it for free because, you know, we want to cover a little bit of cost here. But I have two Virginia Tech tickets that I will give away to someone who downloads the guide with at least a minimal pay. And if it's a couple dollars, that's fine. So if with a minimal pay, if we have enough downloads that pay that cover my cost of the tickets, because I'm not running a charity here, but if that'll cover my face value on those two tickets, then I will pick a name from the ticket purchasers and I'll give away two tickets. They're from the Tide Pride section, so they're not that bad seats. They're in the dome. So free tickets for VaTech. All you got to do is go to the website, alabamafootballpodcast.com, download our guide for a couple of dollars. You'll get the best preseason guide that you're going to find on the market for Alabama football and a chance to win two VaTech tickets. Tommy, I can't make it any better than that, can I?
No, man. That's a pretty sweet offer there, man.
You might have the opportunity to shake Tommy's hand, too, because we'll probably hand off the tickets before the game. You might have an opportunity to shake Tommy's hand.
Man, if you're going to put this offer out, man, I might have to buy this guide so I can get in the lottery.
Hey, man, it's that good. The tickets and the guide, it's that good.
Now, that sounds awesome,
man. So for $5, you have an opportunity. You get to buy the guide, and then you have an opportunity to win the tickets.
That's an awesome deal.
I can't make a better deal than that. All right. Hey, this has been a lot of fun. No kidding. This has been a lot of fun, but this has been the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for listening and roll Tide. Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.